recording.
Talk shoes.
Recorded live.
Okay. We don't have to worry about that because basically this is going to just be a raw podcast. And then once we finish done editing and all that, you know, I just put music and breaks and all that. So, like we talked about before, you don't have to worry about if you screw it up, you have a thought that's going off the tracks, you know, just stop and just say, you know, I need a moment to rephrase or whatever, and then we'll just re-talk over it, and, you know, we just continue to just record it, so it's no big deal.
Okay. So should we discuss the format of this, Monty? Do we have a format? Are we just going to go?
Let's just do what we did last time. We talked about what makes a fanboy by our definition, a fanboy.
You want reminiscence about episode Phantom Menace again? Where were you? What did you do?
Yeah, we can do that, definitely, because we have to talk about that, and then we'll lead into the next part, the final part, which is talking about fanboys, our thoughts, our feelings, our looking back at how we felt since that was been a week and all that, and just kind of reflect on that.
Yep, definitely. Now I'm, like, using lines from the movie.
Yeah, exactly. Gene, do you have a timer?
I do. I just picked it up. How long do you want? 20 minutes?
Yeah, let's do the 20 minutes for both segments. I'm going to try to shoot the 20 for each and try to keep at least by 45 minutes.
We're going to go over.
It'll go over, but we can always just shoot for it, so.
Anything else you want to mention? Any promos? Anything else we got?
Yeah, that's a good question.
You were pitching, you know what I mean? What else?
The pitch is not the pitch, but the thing is the surrogates. Robert and Liddy is going to do a podcast with us on August 21st. Trying to get the exact time. I think it's at 8 o'clock, which is a Friday. Just double check the calendar. Yeah. August 21st, which is a Friday, is going to be at 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. So, if I screw it up. Yeah.
August 21st, 8 p.m., but if I don't know what the fuck you're talking about, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
You know what I'm fucking talking about. I'll give you that.
Okay. I still have to read that graphic novel, by the way.
Yes. I have. That's the next thing I need to get to you guys. So.
Okay.
I mean, we still got plenty of time, but like I said, his next graphic novel is coming out in a couple of weeks, so at least we'll get caught up with at least the first one.
Okay. So, if I may ask Monty, are you going to reiterate the definition of fanboy from the dictionary, or?
Well, we could just talk. I'll bring it up saying, you know, it's like a fanatical personality that's obsessed. Mm-hmm. So that what it is that he's obsessed about. And then we'll just put in our own spin about that and just leave it at that.
Okay.
So I'll say maybe 5 to 10 minutes about our definition and then lead into hopefully the bulk of the 20 minutes before we do the review is going to be talking about, you know, our expectations, waiting for this movie to happen. After we watch the movie, it is kind of live to our expectations and things like that. And then we'll break it down in the review part, compare, you know, our experience to the movie, what we liked about the movie, and so forth. Anything you want to add to it or suggest that we should try another approach?
Well, the only question I have is it good to review Phantom Menace from where we were first, or do Fanboy first? To review a Fanboy first, you know what I mean?
Yeah, okay, fine. We'll do Fanboy first, and then we'll do that last part talking about our experience versus the Fanboy experience in the movie.
I mean, do you think that's better? Do you think that works better?
That's fine. We'll do that. Because when we lead into the review, I have from IMDb, I have like everyone's information up so I can refer to them and call them by name and so forth. So if there's any questions, I have it already set up.
Let me get that up too. Hang on. I usually do that too, but hang on. Damn it. I hate my cell phone battery. Okay, I got a full charge, apparently.
And then the last part is, before we sign off, is recommend, or at least for me, I'm going to recommend that people look at Free Enterprise, which came out in 1998 with Erin McCormick and William Shatner. So this is like an early fanboy version of Fanboys, but this is on Star Trek. And then 77, which is still not out to the mass audience, but it's getting out there. But this is going to be the next one, which takes place right before all of Star Wars happened, basically.
Okay, how do we pronounce these names? I know Sam Huntington. I know Chris. Who is this? Marchetti?
Marquette. Yeah.
Ben Fogel and Jay Baruchel.
Baruch.
I think it was Baruch.
Baruch or Baruchel. And of course, Kristen Bell.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't have problems with that. Her name.
And Seth Rogen.
Yeah, Admiral C. Schultz.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then after looking over Jay's, I just lost Jay. He just closed by accident. Jay's resume, I'm like, oh, that's why he looks familiar, because I saw him in Night at the Museum. So he's been in a lot of movies. I was surprised. Like, he's a little bit part actor, but he's getting around.
Who? What?
Jay Baruch. Baruch.
Oh, right. Got it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
He was also in Tropic Thunder.
Yeah, exactly. And I just checked that out today, so I'm kind of eager to see that tonight. All right, Gina, are you good?
Anyone have any questions? Anything else you got?
I think we're good to go. Joe?
I'm good. You say when?
8:30. We're late. Shit.
Yes. Too bad the time machine's in the shop.
All right. Actually, I see we might have a guest. I'm going to just do a quick little check.
Oh, my God. Someone actually entered your Twitter?
No. It's on our talk show site.
I'm sorry. You're getting a tweet?
No. On my computer, when I do the actual recording, I have an open program in which I see all the calls and I see a text box. So someone's logged into the call. So I just want to say hi to guest number 5.
Oh, okay.
Right here. They can maybe ask a question or give us some suggestions or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've listened to other podcasts that also do this type of situation, and when I hear that the interviewer or interviewee going into a certain conversation, I'm like, oh, I wonder if they have this kind of idea, and I plug that in, and then one time the host actually read it and said, oh, Monster79 has this question, blah, 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 and presented it to the interviewee. And I thought that was really cool. So,
like PR, if you want to join us for any comments or questions, you can join.
Yeah, and so I'm just kind of curious to see how this plays out. And basically, this is practice for when we have the interview with Robert Venditti, because I want to have not only Twitter, but also have this where people actually are logged in real time with us so that they can actually interact. So I want to kind of upgrade our podcast a bit. Okay. Well, they haven't responded back, but that doesn't mean they're not logged into the conversation. They may not have a computer, but in any case, I don't know. Okay. Okay, so let me start doing a countdown. And you guys can hear me okay?
Yeah, you're fine.
Okay. So just remember, let's not try to, I do this often, not overstep our while we're talking. You know, if we're going to say something, I pause 1 or 2 seconds when you hear like a lull and then jump in. And then this way it will give me some space to kind of edit if there's any gaps, so to speak. So, okay. All right, so 5, 4, 3. Hello and welcome once again, Monster Sci-Fi Show fans. This is The Monster with another podcast, finally, after some time. And those who have followed my podcast in the past couple of weeks and are still listening to the Star Trek podcast, I thank you very much. You have not disappointed me one bit, because that podcast has been, in the past couple of years, my best podcast. So far, I've had like over 100 downloads for each of the one-hour specials that I did. And it's better than anything that I've created so far. So I thank you very much for listening to this podcast. And hopefully you'll listen to this podcast and to future podcasts of the Monster Sci-Fi Show. So on that note, on this podcast, since we talked about Star Trek in the last one, this one we're going to be talking about fanboys, which, oddly enough, is talking about Star Wars. So specifically, Phantom Menace is going to be the focus in the fanboys film. So it's with me, as has been my pleasure, to introduce once again my co-host, Mr. Gene.
Hello, thank you. Matthew, always a pleasure.
And I have a special guest who is joining us, who is part of the Borders clan from that podcast. Not Tony from the Cinema Viewfinder, but actually Joe. So, Joe, welcome.
Hello, everyone. Nice to be here.
So originally, we actually tried this podcast last week. We saw Fanboys. We talked about this ad nauseum. We had a great time. But because I had a really crappy mic, it was really bad and it was really low. And I promised you that I would not give you a really bad audio quality. So I wanted to re-record it. And so that's what we're doing tonight on a Friday. So, on that note, let's begin with our definition of a fanboy, since this is what the focus is going to be on this podcast. And basically, a fanboy is pretty much any person that has a kind of obsessive, compulsive personality following whatever the subject may be. For me, I've always noticed that fanboys will be basically in a couple of camps. Either there are comic book fanboys, there are Star Trek fanboys, sci-fi fanboys. So it depends on whatever you want to define them as. Even sports fans can be considered as fanboys to a degree. So I just like to see, Mr. Gene, what is your definition of fanboys, and see if you can add more to that.
Fanboys, like you said, Monty, are people who have an obsession. Whether it's for a more normal idea, which is like sports or whatever, comic books, TV shows, what have you. Any sort of just particular interest, just something that fascinates you about, something grabs you, you know, and makes you sit there and say, I want more. I want to know about the people in this, or who this guy is, what kind of cereal does he or she eat in the morning, that kind of idea. It is just a liking for something. It's a moment. It's a captured moment, I think, either in normal things like sports or television or movies or comic books, something that grabs you, something that interests you, that you say, yes, I want more of that. And then the exploration continues, and you become knowledgeable about that. And that's what I think makes you a fan, that quest.
Okay, good. Joe, let me hear your thoughts on what a fanboy is.
Basically, I believe that you both described the fanboys to a T, where we as a group are obsessed about a particular thing. What that thing may be is what normally draws us together. As you said, in this instance, it could be Star Wars, Star Trek, comic books, sports, what have you. But I do have to mention this, and I believe I mentioned in the last time we tried to record, that fandom does not normally exist in a vacuum. It is a tribal thing. We sort of go back to our roots as in humanity and having this common interest that that draws us together, that brings us together, that we like to discuss and say what we're happy or not happy about. And I think therein lies the true essence of fandom. Not just our own obsession, but our sharing of our mutual obsession.
So are you saying there are cavemen fanboys out there?
Possibly.
I think what he's saying is the idea is that if you have a fire burning inside of you and you can find others to add logs on, they'll make the fire brighter and burn stronger. By all means, find those people, connect. Even dorks can be cool. Is that a bad idea?
Well, I don't know if I'd go quite that far, but you never know.
in numbers lies strength, right? You know, I mean.
As opposed to being a fanboy of the Caveman series, which, oddly enough, I'm the only one who's seen it, and actually love it, and I want to have it on DVD. So, yeah, I know.
Why do you hurt me? Manimal, Mantis, Caveman.
Don't even start. You made it worse for me this afternoon when you bought me the Godzilla animated series on DVD. So
you'd like it. I just gave
yes, I know, I red. Know that. But come on, honestly, Godzuki, just like Jar Jar, ruined the series.
He's the Snarf, Jar Jar. What other?
No. Snarf does not belong in that equation. I'm sorry. I love
Snarf. You should. Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
Now, Orko. On He-Man, that's someone you should throw under the fire. Throw him in the butt.
Wasn't his name Orko?
Yes.
Orko. Yeah,
he said Orko, I think. But anyway, okay,
yeah. Sorry. Potato.
Do we go as far back as Gloop and Gleep from the Herculoids?
Oh, God.
Oh, gee.
Hey, I'm a fanboy.
Well, that's the weird part. Is it... I don't see myself as being a one fanboy or one genre or one type of fanboy. I run the gambit of everything. You know, I could be very obsessive about pretty much anything that I'm interested in, but I didn't even know there's a word for that kind of eclectic kind of taste. Whereas you can see, like, you know, a comic fanboy, they're obsessive about everything on comics, but it's just comics. Maybe it's just me. I don't know if that's even relevant.
I think it works in sort of a round table bit, in that it can be niche. Like, I'm interested in Star Wars. I'm interested in Star Trek. I'm interested in comics. I'm interested in cartoons. I'm interested in what have you. And what grabs my attention at the time is probably what I'll be a fan of at the moment. That can change over time, or there could be things that draw me back into something that I may not have seen for a while that make me enjoy it again.
Yeah, but my question for that is, though, why are we more drawn to more sci-fi, futuristic, superhero ideas? You know, that's a little unique. There is almost a stereotype, but we fit into it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I say that, in the same breath, I sit there and say to our loved ones that married Monty and to my fiancé, thank you. Thank you so much for choosing us. We're lucky
yeah.
We love you.
So, because we not only have we kissed a girl, we kind of, part of us has moved out of our parents' basement, but in Florida there are no basements because, you know, we're at sea level practically, so that's why we can't have any. But it's weird because I understand that personality that lives in that world, and it's fun to be in that world 24/7 and never think about anything else outside of that world.
Yes, Joe, who lives in the Warcraft world. What do you have to say to this?
Hey, it's another form of fandom.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but you escape there constantly.
Yeah, well...
The hours of, like, what, 12 to 5 in the morning, you were there.
No, but,
all right,
it's just weird that how it's all... if you step back a bit, it's all interconnected. one thing leads to another or influences another, and it's like there's no stopping ground. It's like, okay, from this point on, I cannot go further. But it seems like we just keep on going and going and going. It's just adding and adding to our obsession, basically.
Yeah, basically so, we have our inner Energizer bunnies going, king, 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 hey, this is neat, king, 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 hey, this is neat, king, 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 okay.
But I think the important thing about that is that we're still enjoying it and having fun. And that the ideas that come out in movies like, say, the most recent Star Trek and, you know, other films that have come out, like Fanboys, inspire us and make us happy and make us clap our hands like little children, you know, when things happen. We're like, I get that. That's so awesome.
Exactly.
It brings us such joy.
So one of the major points, or the major point, is that these guys want to see the Star Wars Episode One, Phantom Menace, for their friend who is dying of cancer. Sorry if I'm going to make a spoiler alert warning, but that's the main focus, the main push of the whole story, is getting this guy to see the movie for the first time before anybody else. So before we go into the actual reviewing of that movie, I want to talk about our own feelings, how we felt before we actually got to see the movie, during the movie, and even afterwards, and how we felt. I'm just kind of curious about during that time, which was about 1999 for all of us.
Yes, I think that's correct.
Okay. I was living in Orlando. Joe, were you up in New York or here in Miami?
No, I was up in New York.
You were in New York, and then Gene was in Miami.
I was in Miami, yes.
Okay, so actually they'll give us kind of a really good, unique point of view, so to speak. So, Joe, since you're the guest, let's start with you. Let me know about your experience before watching Star Wars, during and afterwards.
Okay, much like all other fanboys, I was anticipating the movie and going, wow, we're finally getting something new from Lucas. I was like, we got to see some of the 4, 5, and 6 again in the theaters, which I thought was also a real rare gift. But the simple fact that, oh, wow, we're going to get to see this movie. And I had the tickets to see it the first day. I was there with the lines, with the crowds of the people who were basically as obsessive compulsive as fanboys can be with the lightsabers and the costumes and everything else. And I got to see the movie at 3 in the morning at basically this theater. It's like I just finished an 8-hour shift. I was coming from work, and I'm like, yeah, I'm going to see this movie. And all
you mean you didn't take the day off?
Well, I took the day after off.
Uh-oh.
I didn't take the day before off because I was working the same day I went to go see it.
Mm-hmm.
So I got out of work, went to go see the movie.
Okay. And what was it that did it meet your expectations? Did you cry afterwards?
Well, that's an interesting thought. I mean, I think I was too exhausted to cry. I was more like, oh boy. How can I describe the feeling? Like I thought I had taken some weird acid trip or something. Not that I use drugs, of course, but it's the closest analogy I can come to. I'm like exiting the theater. There's sunlight. It was nighttime when I entered. And there's mist rising from the ground, and I'm going into the transit system to go home and stuff. And it was like this heady experience, just being there with all these people, like, yay! Whatever else. I think the closest thing was probably when I first went to go see Episode 6.
Okay.
And Return of the Jedi. But then again, that was a bit different fanboy experience because I basically had to go see the movie again because everybody was screaming, yay, every 5 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. You couldn't hear a damn thing.
I couldn't hear a damn thing. But I could hear everything in this movie. Phantom Menace, I heard every line of dialogue. And every bit of Mesa Cha-Cha. And I'm like, okay. On to you, please. Share your experiences.
All right, Jane, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry, you said Machi. My apologies. My experience is, God, I was in Miami, Florida. I was with my friends, some of them dressed up in cloaks. I think I dressed up in a cloak. I put on makeup. I wasn't that obsessive. I was happy. It was funny. It was one of the rare times in, I think, cinematic history where you could dress up in costume and not be hurt or looked at strangely. You know, people looked at you and actually smiled because they knew how big Star Wars was. You know, it was socially acceptable at that time to do so. And it was fun. I mean, I just remember the experience. I remember a little bit of disappointment, but just being a part of that community again, being together with all these fine people and knowing that they love Star Wars. I mean, it happens, what, maybe once, maybe twice in a lifetime?
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. You know, you're lucky. And the fact that it came back after being gone for, what, over 10 years plus?
Yep.
You know, to revisit that universe, quite an experience. Yeah.
Good time.
Oh, I have, really.
Well, for me, I had moved up to Orlando from Miami with my wife. And we both wanted to see Star Wars, which was a big plus because normally you never get to have a spouse that's into what you're into. I lucked out. So we did a midnight showing, and of course, we got at least new T-shirts in black with new Star Wars logos and all that cool stuff. Everybody else was out there, dressed up to the nines, although there was a Darth Maul wearing sandals with white socks. So I'm like, dude, you really got to stop that. At least cover it up, you know, make it longer robes or take off the white socks or black socks. Don't make it so damn obvious. You're stupid. So I remember it's like sitting in there and like it didn't feel like I had felt when I was 10 years old when I first saw Star Wars the very first time. But I was happy to see it again. Only because this was part of my childhood. This is the first movie that opened up my eyes to sci-fi in general and to like a much wider world that was presented before me. And as I'm sitting there, you know, time has passed by and like I'm much older and I was happy for it. Wasn't the greatest, but at least it felt like this is still my childhood. I can still play in that universe. I can still be part of it. Even after all this time, even after all the experiences of a lifetime, so to speak, since I was 10, that I can still go back to that world. So on that note, it was, to me, great to have once again. And one of the things that I came to my conclusion, we talked about this, was that when I look back at all the movies in which I had stayed up late at night for the first showing or for the midnight or for 8 o'clock in the morning, whatever it was, it had always been Star Wars. Never Star Trek, never for any other film except for Star Wars. And I thought that was such an incredible moment to look back on that, holy crap, that's true. I've never done that for any other film except for Star Wars. And except for the very first one, which, of course, didn't know anything about it when it first came out, did that for Empire, did that for Return of the Jedi, and of course everything else afterwards. I've done a midnight show for pretty much everything from that point on, and I just thought that was just amazing that movie can have such an impact and to have such a following that I'm devoted myself, even with the family, to make sure that we had a day set aside to have, you know, to ourselves to go out there and be with other fans. And, gee, the word with me with the Attack of the Clones? Or was it for... No. It was for Revenge of the Sith, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And we worked together at the time, and we took the day off afterwards.
Yeah.
So we planned this. It was an event. So I love that.
I think the interesting thing about it is that the idea is like it's almost like a church. Forgive me. I know I don't mean to sound anti-religion, but there is spirituality in the Star Wars movie. The idea of the Force that's there in that tree, in that log, whatever. It's funny to me because when you go to a church, there's a community,
mm-hmm.
you know. And in Star Wars, fine, we get together every once every 3 or 4 years, maybe, or however long it takes to make the prequels. But you come together, and there's a following, you know, and feeling safe and secure, and being there and knowing that everyone loves the movies and that everyone's going to get along because, you know, I think sci-fi, pop culture fans that come together for conventions, they're the most polite people, even when they've been drinking. Which I think is very interesting. Because, you know, even when you go to a con, they're like, where's the end of the movie? That's the other side of the block. You're like, okay. And you just go quietly. No one argues. No one fights. And if they fight, they fight with the fake lightsabers. It's okay. It's kind of fun to watch. But it's so civilized. That's what I like about it, you know. And everyone's there. And it's people of all ages. I mean, for me, the interesting thing about the prequels was that it's for the baby boomers' children, you know. It was for our generation, because by
right.
the time that the prequels came out, we'd already had kids. Well, if we were lucky, and God favored us, good things happened in our lives. We all had children, and we were all, you know, Star Wars. Wow, I gotta go see that.
Yeah, and I think
yeah.
it was kind of a smart move when right before the prequels came out, how George Lucas kind of revamped all the first three movies, or 4, 5, and 6.
Right.
Like, you've only seen Star Wars in this box, like the TV format, and then now you have to see it now in the theaters. And I think if that didn't happen, that reimagined that feeling of coolness, that universe, that, yeah, it was back in the 70s or early 80s, and you forgot about it, now you see it on VHS back then. It really had to be with an audience. I don't remember jumping for joy for any other movie out of my seat other than watching a Star Wars movie for the very first time, you know, or sitting so far forward I'm about to fall off my seat because I was just so into the movie. Not even the last Star Trek allowed me to do that. As much as I loved it, no movie has ever done that. So I'm sorry.
No, although I must say I was surprised that I just saw Star Trek recently. It's been out for like 4 or 5 weeks now. At this point,
mm-hmm.
I saw the new Star Trek movie again because I'm a fan, and people still clapped at the end of the movie, which I was like, wow.
Wow. I know what happens here.
No. That went out in the 70s. What the?
Yeah,
what?
And that was the other thing that I kind of missed out. Well, at least when my first experience in being up in New York was that when the movie was let out, or before the movie started, you could buy a program in the theater. And I had, I think, the first three movies already sealed and put in my box and storage and so forth. But there was a fun thing about, you love the movie, buy the program. And afterwards, now it's, you saw the movie, go buy the other merchandise, all the toys, all the food tie-ins and all that. And so on that respect, I think, you know, when we look at Phantom Menace and how it was overly merchandised, they just went completely bonkers. It was probably the worst move they did. But considering, you know, the market, there wasn't a whole lot of new stuff, just recycling old Star Wars toys, they were a little too much too zealous in their effort and kind of bit them in the ass in the end.
That's a good point, and we'll pick up on that in a little bit. But, Monty, I do think it's a little past time for our first break.
Damn it. All right. So, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the actual view of Fanboys, and then we'll compare the Fanboys' experience to our own experience and see how to connect or disconnect. Or we'll see. Stay tuned, guys. Bye.
You know, Monty, when we do this again, when you put this up on the web, please put, like, banter about fanboys and like, mindless conversation that goes different directions. And then maybe for part two, when we do this next part, put the actual review of fanboys.
Okay.
Because
right.
I
hold
understand
on,
if I'm listening and, like, even like, oh, I want to hear a podcast about fanboys. If I get that first 30 minutes, I'm going to be so pissed.
Well, it's called a teaser.
Yeah, right. A 30-minute teaser.
A full 20-minute teaser, yeah.
Like Spaceballs and going down the end of the ship. So
yeah, okay.
Wait, oh, my God.
Ludicrous speed now.
They've gone to plan.
God.
All right.
Well, all I can say is chicken, Colonel Sanders. Oh, Gene, are you going to tell them about the van, or shall I?
The what?
The van we saw earlier today.
Oh, God. You tell him. I want to...
Okay, well, the reason I segued into that joke is that we also... We saw the USS Blackwell, I believe it was.
Black Star.
Okay, it was a Black Star. somebody has a Federation insignia in the van. Basically, it was a lot of fun. I was like looking at it, and Gene was already going, come on, Joe, move away, Joe. I'm like, what?
Monty, explain this a little bit maybe better. We stopped at the KFC, and there was a van painted like a shuttlecraft from Star Trek. It had all the correct detailing and logos all over it. Starfleet Academy thing in the window, advertisements on the side, and in the windows, fucking Star Trek bear. It was just all messed up.
Was it a White Voyager cargo van?
Yes, I think it was.
Yeah, yes, I know of it. That's the same people that I invited to do the Star Trek event over at Borders in Coconut Grove.
Them?
That was them. They were actually able to put the van in front of Planet Hollywood and like, okay, we got one, but that was it. But it was like a dirty-ass Voyager shuttlecraft. So I know of them.
Monty, may I remind you that anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering. Suffering leads to pain. Don't do it.
And wait, pain leads to prune juice.
Warrior's drink.
I gotta go to the bathroom. I drank too much. God, I can't believe when Michael Jordan actually went up in front of a convention and said, blah, 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 and please, your fans, please, no more prune juice.
Okay.
All right, so let's pick up our conversation then.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's do the countdown.
Got it.
Five. What?
Go ahead.
All right, 5, 4, 3. And we're back, Monster Sci-Fi Show fans. Let's begin with an actual review. I know you've actually been waiting to see what our thoughts were on Fanboys. Some backstory. This movie had been delayed for quite some time with the Weinstein brothers. The major sticking point was in part due to the storyline in which Linus, which is by Chris Marquette, had cancer, and that storyline was basically edited out of the version that the Weinstein brothers, who produced the film, wanted to cut. And without that movie being in there, that movie would never have worked. As much as we love Fanboys, that was essential to the actual movie. So that's something that I thought was kind of interesting. And considering the Weinstein owned Miramax and they do quality films, how they did not see that connection is beyond me. So, real quick, let's talk about the cast real quick. We have Sam Huntington, who played Eric. And if you know Sam Huntington, he's from Caveman. He played Andy, those of you who actually watched the actual series, like me. More importantly, he was in Superman Returns. He was Jimmy Olsen. That in 2006, that movie came out.
Mm-hmm.
And he was also in Veronica Mars, which I have not seen the series, but I definitely wanted to see that series. We also have Dan Fogler. Dan is someone that I actually saw for the first time in Balls of Fury. If you have not seen that movie, I encourage you, it's laugh out funny, especially with Christopher Walken. You cannot laugh. You cannot have more a better time than watching him with his accent playing ping pong. It was brilliant. Then we have Jay Baruchel. Now, when I first saw Jay in this movie, I said, oh, my God, that was James Franco, who was in Spider-Man 1, 2, and 3, that he was Harry Osborn. And he's not. That's, it looks like him, but it's not. He actually, and what reminded me of him was that, because he looks like that, I had just saw him in Night at the Museum Part 2. So he was in that movie and other films with Seth Rogen, which we'll talk about in a moment, that he's a bit actor, but he is out there. You'll see him in a lot of new roles that, like, oh, he was in that one and that one and that one and so forth. Then, of course, we have Kristen Bell, who those who watch Fearless will know her as Elle. Elle was a great character for Heroes. And hold on.
I love this child care. It just happens at school.
It's okay.
Very nice. It adds the realism of the, you know, the working parent thing, the paradigm about the, well, I got to take care of something. Hang on.
I can't say anything.
And you're forgetting, don't forget you did Veronica Mars, Monty.
Okay.
And she was Sarah Marshall, and forgetting Sarah Marshall, which no one really remembers because we forgot that.
Yeah.
But
that movie. Was it?
Oh, it was awesome. You got to see that movie, too.
Okay. Well, one of the other things about Zoe.
Mm-hmm.
Not Zoe. I'm sorry. The one thing also,
Zoe is the character. That's correct.
No. I'm talking about Kristen Bell. In IMDb.com, I saw that she is also in Astro Boy, which is going to be coming out later this year, the animated movie. So I thought that's kind of cool to kind of throw in there. And, of course, we also have Seth Rogen, who, at first glance, you may not recognize him because this movie came out much earlier in his career, plus it doesn't look like him. And at least one movie, at least one part of the movie doesn't look like him. And pretty damn funny.
That's what you've got to say about it. You come up with this whole synopsis and you just say, pretty damn funny. That's okay, good. Good for you.
I can't give anything else away because that kind of ruins the movie.
All right. Kind of lame, but okay, I'll go with it.
Okay. Oh, look, mister, I don't do podcasts.
I don't do podcasts, but I don't watch BSG. Because I try to work and do things with my life.
Oh,
do we
want to bring up BSG? I don't think we want to do that. I'm reading a Jasper Ford novel, The Fourth Dare. You have yet to even crack open the case of Battlestar Galactica.
Oh. Yeah, but just remember, if I'm holding on to it for at least 7 years, it's mine.
Not anymore. I know where you live.
You now, I think. So.
And I know where you're going to be living.
Come up and get it, Monty. Come up and get it.
And I know where your girlfriend lives. Or should I say fiancé now?
I'm so proud of that.
Let's see what she's doing on Facebook. Oh, look, Gene, I'm poking her.
Oh, God.
You bastard. All right, anyway, getting back to the movie.
Okay, so going back to the movie, as we talked about, this is basically, it's a road trip film. It's for diehard Star Wars fans. Who
can't even do that.
Who want to get their friend Linus a screening of the actual film, or steal a copy of the film from Skywalker Ranch. So, with that, I wanted to hear your opinion, Mr. Gene, first. Let's hear what you think about the movie.
If you've watched Star Wars more than 5 times, if you quote dialogue from the movie, if you have any fondness for Star Wars, Episode 1, 2, and 3, you don't even need the prequels, because in the movie time, it hasn't happened yet. You must see this movie. I was so impressed with this film. I cannot believe, I was blown away. I mean, the critics in my area sat there and reviewed it and said, it's kind of got the Clerk 2 kind of weird directorial syndrome. You'd be better to see it on DVD. And I'm kind of glad that I waited that long, because it was just, it's made for fans. If you know anyone that likes the Star Wars trilogy, the original, they got to see this film. It is chock full of celebrity appearances, lines, references, pop culture trivia stuff, and twists. I mean, it easily makes my top 10 list of all greatest time movies, at least because it's so cultural. It freezes time. And it was such a wonderful experience. I was really happy with it. I mean, Carrie Fisher, Billy Dee Williams, and all these other fine celebrities show up and give it their all. And it's really well written. Joe, what did you think?
Well, I thought it was an awesome movie as well. I basically enjoyed the camaraderie, the interaction between all the characters. I just thought that was so well done. And I basically felt that it gave me a sympathetic feeling, because I know people like this and who I would have these interactions with as well. And if I go to a big convention, you know, or something, I feel like, okay, I can run into these people in real life. Except for maybe Zoe, because she's like a dodo bird. It's so rare that you'll probably never find one. But I'm not saying they're Sandra. They're not. Yeah, if you find one, put your hooks in and never ever let go. But as I was saying, I mean, you'll find girls with the same attitude and ability as Zoe, but I don't know if you'll find one as pretty. Well, good luck to you. Anyway, the movie itself, I thought was very, very smartly written. The acting was excellent, and it just felt like something, how can I put it? It felt like a reflection of how I felt about a lot of the stuff. So, yeah, it was written for people like me in mind, and for all of us to be able to commiserate about and say, hey, they knew what they were talking about, and they made one hell of a movie.
Well, what they refer to, sorry, as a love letter to Star Wars, and that it really is. It shines so bright. I mean, it's such care. I mean, I really want to find the writer and or director of this movie and say, good job. I was really impressed.
Now, there is plans. I'm not sure if this is going to be official, of a sequel in which they're going to go down to Australia and crash the set of Attack of the Clones. So that's another speculation on the next one, if that happens. It'd be kind of cool. I'm not sure it's going to have the same emotional impact as the first one, but I think that it's plausible enough that that would work.
Well, I would very much like to hear what you think about this film, but my God, I mean, I don't understand how they could possibly think of removing the idea of Linus having the cancer. It's the whole impetus of the film, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, we all love Star Wars, and that's great, but for it to be your friend's, your best friend's dying wish, and make sure he gets that fulfilled, I mean, that's what gets the whole thing rolling. I can't imagine the film without that.
Now, on that note, from a fan point of view, if you took out the whole cancer bit, we would understand the need to see the movie before anybody else. But for someone going into this movie who has no idea what it is to be a fanboy, the idea about cancer, which is real for all of us, it has to be on a first. I'm going to start again. The idea of the cancer storyline affects us all one way or another. Hold on.
Well, I know Muddy's away for a bit, so I'll just keep talking for a little bit. I know that Monty's been touched by cancer, and it's touched my family as well, and it's tough, and it's difficult, and it's real. But giving that grounding in reality for me really was very endearing. It made this fantasy moving, it planted its feet on the ground and made the whole friendship camaraderie thing even stronger.
Right.
So I was very happy with
that. And you have that willingness to do that beyond friendship. And, you know, it's a real thing that you can honestly say, I could do that. I would do that for my friend, you know, who is facing that kind of demise. It would make perfect sense. So if he put that movie and fill it in with something else, you know, Walt Disney, going to the moon, or, you know, whatever that was, it was still worth because of the whole cancer storyline. So, and again, I'm still miffed that still was even discussed as not being part in the movie. And why that even delayed the movie is probably one of the stupidest ideas, but you know what? I'm glad that it came out when it did, especially now. It really spoke to me about really appreciating not only your passions, but also doing, you know, things for your friends. Because, you know, in the end, you know, we only got this one life. We might as well enjoy all of our companies and enjoy our passions together and explore other things and, you know, and have a great time while we're still here.
Amen to that. All I can say is that, yeah, basically, without the cancer storyline, you lose the main strength or plot, I mean, the main focus of the plot. Mm-hmm. I did see that the other subplots, though, all sort of segued into it, too. It's,
yeah.
Everyone, like, you have your basic journeys of discovery. Some, like, Eric basically had things that he had to go through. He had his trials, and so did, Hutch. Hutch, being Dan Fogel's character, also had his trials. Everybody has the things they had to go through in order to get to where they got to at the end of the movie.
Right.
But it was being together that allowed you to take the trip in the first place.
Mm-hmm. So it's understandable, mm-hmm. whether you're a family or not, but,
mm-hmm.
you know, in that course of the storyline, it's an enhancement because you have something that everyone understands of cancer, and then double that with what it means to be a fanboy, and you're hitting on, like, two major nerves in our lives, in my case, and Gene's, it's major. So it has more of an impact than any other movie because of those factors.
Right.
I just can't speak about it enough. That movie was, as Gene put it, it's from the heart. The dialogue, the interaction, things that were said in the car, or things that Jane and I have done in the car, or done, you know, with our friends, you know, on our road trips. So it's a very good, if not incredible, slice of life for us to have preserved on DVD.
Yeah, so I think the movie is really something special. You'll get it whether you watch Star Wars once or five or six times or even hundreds of times. You'll get it. It's more of a movie about friendship. The thing is that if you like Star Wars, it's got all these wonderful pop culture references thrown into it that really make it worth watching. Otherwise, you're just like, oh, I don't quite get this, but I do get the idea.
Right, you get the joke.
Because the whole thing is about friendship and about camaraderie. And about doing the right thing, essentially. And it does, yes, it does go to the heart, indeed. And I'm very happy to have enjoyed it and shared it with you guys. It was very fun.
Yeah, which is another good thing. You know, had we seen this on our own, yeah, we would have loved it. But I think the fact that, one, we are fanboys, we love Star Wars, and this movie was about us and for us. And we shared that moment, and it was just fantastic to do that. Because we just laughed and had a great time watching this. So
yeah.
It's one of those things, I want to see this again. I actually want to see it again with you guys, you know. It's one of
yeah.
those moments.
Exactly. It's one of those things that you're like going, it was so much fun with these guys the first time. I think it's going to be just as much fun the next time, where we can even gather perhaps even better nuances that we may have missed the first time.
Yeah, why? Just like when we go watch Return of the Jedi or whatever, people are laughing too damn much. We don't understand what's going on. We miss all the damn dialogue. So, yeah.
Exactly.
So, but on that note, since, you know, the whole main focus was that them getting to watch Phantom Menace at the very end,
mm-hmm.
and that one line that Eric says, and I'm not sure if I should say it, but I think really sums it up that, you know, as he said, what if this movie sucked? And
spoiler alert!
on that note, is it fair now to say that this was not one of the greatest movies, or was this just like, looking back in hindsight, what was wrong with it?
You sure?
With which one, Fanboys, or with
no,
like
no.
Phantom Menace?
Phantom Menace, Joe.
No, no,
Phantom
Menace? Yeah.
I mean,
what was
the
wrong with
the point of it is, no matter whether you like it or rewatched it, the important thing to know is that everyone in America went to see that movie.
Yeah.
Even the free world who even liked episodes 4, 5, and 6 went to see that movie. And simply because of that, it did its job. You know? It doesn't matter whether it made multi-million dollars. I don't care about that. I don't, you know, George Lucas, you're a nice guy, but you're a control freak, whatever. But the fact that it brought people together. It brought people together that hadn't talked in years. It brought people together that, you know, it brought us together again. That's what it was supposed to do.
I
and
understand.
But then
but
that, after what, a hiatus of 14, 15 years, you know, it was nice. And for that, I'll always treasure it.
Okay.
And Fadden Boys, again, cements it in my mind. I mean, we talked about the audience scene at the end of it. There's a scene where they finally get inside the theater and people are standing in line. It goes on for a little bit, but you remember that. And you were like, I remember that, too. I remember people with the, you know, the Snow Trooper outfit and the Darth Vader outfit and the, well, not the Jar Jar Binks outfit, but, you know, whatever, just standing in line. And going, yeah, this is good. This is home. This is my community of people. These are my friends. It was very cool.
So are you saying that time lessens the pain? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm just saying. For a fleeting moment before the movie started, before the lights dim, I was happy. That's
of
all.
Course. And that's all that matters. In your mind, that's all that matters.
That's until the moment that Jar Jar comes in and knocks down Obi-Wan Kenobi, I was relatively happy.
I just think that on a whole it was fine, even with the annoying Jar Jar as could be, but man, I just wish that my biggest letdown was you have this very cool Darth Maul character who you see pictures of carrying a double lightsaber. You've never seen this character before, and before you know it, off he goes. He's cut in half, and he's dead. Oh, sorry. Spoiler alert. He was cut in half, and then he was alive.
I don't think it's a spoiler alert, Monty. Once again, I think everyone's seen
wait,
that. Wait.
I have to ask this. Is there a rule, I mean, a statute of limitations for spoiler alerts, at least for movies that have already come out? Should there be anything after 5 years you can spoil? Because, like, if you haven't seen it in that time, it doesn't matter.
Well, we have to think about the next generation that's never seen it. So.
I don't know. I'm still holding things back. Like my friends sit there and they, I'm reading Harry Potter, and I won't say anything about the sixth novel. You know, which is like, you know, oh no, that's a lot of
Dumbledore.
Reading.
Dumbledore.
Yeah.
Hey, what? Oh, I didn't mean to say that.
Oops.
No, but it's a weird point that you bring up, and I remember. Listening to the Slice of Sci-Fi podcast, they talked
mm-hmm.
about a Blade Runner being recut with
mm-hmm.
Ridley Scott, and that the focus was, at least, that Ridley Scott had always said that Deckard was always a replicant. So everyone's like, "Oh my God, this is incredible!" Whatever, but you know, this is an old movie, but this is a brand new thing. So I really don't know where you would say this is a spoiler alert as opposed to something like that being recut and redone, or at least a refocus on an element that was always hinted at and then now was confirmed. So it's hard to say, you know, it's a spoiler, even though it's an older movie.
Well, if I may, like, if there was a newer movie, like, well, I'll use one that's already out, and everyone who's listening to this podcast probably has seen it already. If not, I will say in bold letters, spoiler alert, about Spock and Uhura's tryst, which I'm like going, I did not see this coming from anywhere. I did not hear about it from anyone. And had it been spoiled for me, I still would have seen the movie, but I would have been like, you know, it's one of those what the hell moments when you see it, you're like, huh? Oh,
yeah.
My goodness. It's like, you're like, okay, it wouldn't have destroyed my desire to see the movie, but it would have lessened the impact of that scene had I known about it. That's what I'm saying. So
yeah,
it's like...
Funny you should mention that.
Uh-huh.
My experience, okay. Here I am, I'm, 13, going on 14, and my stepfather... And I loved him dearly. He passed away a long time ago. But when Return of the Jedi was just about coming out, he read in a newspaper that Luke Skywalker and Princess Leia were brother and sister. And he told me this, and I'm like, what? Wait, no, that can't be right. Because, and he's like, no. I was just kidding. Because he saw how... kind of like upset I was getting because, you know, brother and sister, you don't think that they're going to hit it off anymore. But I'm like, he spoiled it for me because when I go see the movie, I'm like, I'm cringing in my seat. He ruined it. That's like saying, you know, oh my God, Vader is Luke Skywalker's father before you even know that even happened. That's a really bad thing. So
yeah.
I understand spoilers. It was done to me in a very young age, and I promise I will never do that again, but damn it.
Okay.
It's hard sometimes, Monty.
No, I'm sorry. You have to understand at some point, everyone will put their foot in it. Everyone will say something, mentioning whether it's Santa Claus, the Tooth Fairy, Vader, Spock and Uhura. Everyone's going to step in it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's interesting when it happens. Because you realize it's almost a universal law cover, you know. No, Santa Claus, yeah, he's coming. His guys, how can he be at this mall and that mall? He's got agents, and he moves real fast. And
he's hopping on the bunny trail.
all I can say is I'll go back to fanboys for a moment and just say that.
Yes.
Monty, it was interesting you chose that particular bit that was spoiled for you, because, I mean, I love the argument within the movie about that, too. So I'm saying, it's a great segue back in. I'm like, okay.
Yes.
Yeah. But it was already, shall we say, talked about then and, like, and the arguments that occur because of, like, these little things. Again, that's another mark of the fanboy. You're like going, well, this is my interpretation of it. What do you mean I'm wrong? No, well, let's discuss this. No, we'll have a shoddy match.
But it's fun to argue about sci-fi. It's an enjoyable thing, and particularly when you're knowledgeable about it, it's fun to sit there. Although I do have trouble harping about the new Star Trek movie because I was so happy to see it come out.
Yeah.
It's full of holes. But must say, it is time for our next break, gentlemen. A little bit past.
Well, that's much for our next break, but this is actually going to be the actual end of our podcast. But a couple of things I wanted to bring up was that just like we saw fanboys get for Star Wars, there is another fanboy-type movie called Free Enterprise. If you have not seen it, it stars Eric McCormick from Will and Grace, and, of course, William Shatner is in there. That basically is the Star Trek version of Fanboys. I definitely and I highly recommend that you get to see that. There's also another movie that's going to be coming out. Supposedly, this came out in 2007. and Star Wars Celebration number 4, I believe. It did play to a selected audience, and it got good reviews. It is planned to be released soon. I don't know when, but 77 basically is the year that when Star Wars came out and deals with another type of fanboy who is making independent films and looks to Star Wars as his, you know, his embodiment of the Force and all things that he wants to do in life. So I do have at least a piece of that in my blog, but I will put a link, if you listen to this podcast, to at least 77, as well. There's a trailer, which is really cool, so I encourage you to watch that. And another promo, August 21st at 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, Robert Venditti, who is the creator of The Surrogates. And if you have not seen the trailers, this is a movie that is his first graphic novel that was turned into a movie and stars Bruce Willis, which is coming out in September. So he is going to do a podcast, or another podcast, I should say, with us. So if you're interested, I'm going to do this live podcast. I want you to be on the show, ask questions. If you are on Twitter, you can find me at Monster Sci-Fi Show, but it's spelled like the new sci-fi logo is coming up soon. So it's Monster S-Y-F-Y Show. So that's Monster Sci-Fi Show on Twitter. So
sell out.
On that note, I'm sorry?
Sell out. Go ahead.
You who fell out?
You sell out. I said, I'm sorry. Sell out. Go ahead.
He's not a sellout. We should all sell out.
Just say.
Come on.
You talked it like the way that we didn't. Okay, go ahead.
Come on. You know, for a first graphic novel, we
no,
cannot
no,
sell
no,
out.
Not
no,
all,
no,
you.
No, he's not saying
you.
Anything. You're
the
sci-fi.
The way you sell sci-fi.
rephrase that.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't quite understand that, Mr. Chain.
Sorry. Just you're spelling sci-fi in that new way.
Oh,
that we didn't.
Oh, you know why? Because I couldn't put sci-fi the way it's spelled S-I-S-C-I-F-I in Twitter. I didn't have enough characters, or at least it was too long.
Just
that's
why. I'm sorry. I just, you know.
You jumped the gun.
Sorry. I do that sometimes.
Oh. Oh, you put your foot in it.
I know. Sorry, Mata. Go ahead.
Oh, brother.
So, sellout, huh?
Yeah, well, I guess so.
I'll talk to you.
Close the show.
We'll
discuss this after.
I'll talk to you after the podcast. All right, so those are the upcoming things. Those are your assignments. Let me know what you think. If you want to be a guest, if you have a good topic, your thoughts on past podcasts, email me at monstersci-fi show@gmail.com, and it's the correct spelling, monster sci-fi, S-C-I-F-I show@gmail.com, not that sci-fi channel. Right. Okay, Mr. Gene, does that make
you
happy now?
I'm pleased. Thank you. Running out of my rear. Thank you.
Yeah. What'll be the first time? So I'm that. Joe, thank you very much for being my guest again on this re-recording of the podcast for Fanboys.
No problem. No problem. I'll be happy to come on anytime. Enjoyed the process and hope to be able to do it again sometime soon.
All right, sir. Thank you. And Mr. Gene, maybe that'll be on next time with you. I don't know. but as always, thank you for your brilliance and your, I don't know what it is, that thing you call your wits, your wisdom, the foot in your mouth. I don't know.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir.
Not at all, sir. Thank you. Always a pleasure.
All right. Okay. All right, Monster Sci-Fi Show fans, this has been another great podcast, and I hope you enjoy it. So with that, have a good night. Take care. All right. That was pretty cool.
I don't know. How do you feel about this one? Was it strong? It was all right. We're reminiscing too much.
No, it's fine. It's fine for what it is, because that's the whole focus of it.
Yeah, that's the whole concept of part of the concept of being a fanboy. You reminisce.
Yeah.
You always gloss over things and make them nicer than they actually were.
Monty, man, I think you should record that. Re-record that closing. I'm sorry about the shout-out. What? What did you say? They're like, no. I don't want to offend him. I'm just saying. Man, sci-fi. What is that? You texted me. You couldn't believe they did that. And now you're doing it? What the?
No, and I told you. Now you know the rest of the story.
Yes. Thank you. And now the five listeners that listen to your show are going to hear.
Even more confused.
I just like to see them fight because it's fun.
All right, guys. So, right, what I'm going to be putting this back up, hopefully it'll be by Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And, Joe, do you have an email address?
Tell me your email address, Joe. Go ahead, tell me your email address.
All right, hold on. Wait, before I...
Okay.
Wait.
Whenever you're ready.
Hold on.
We'll give Monty 5 points if he identifies. I'm not sure Monty will get it.
He might. No, you didn't get it, Gene, so that's okay.
There are lots of things that Gene doesn't get.
What?
That's true.
Lately.
This is true.
All right.
I've been drinking. What do you want from me?
What's the email?
My email is RYU.
RYU.
K-E-N.
A-E-N?
No, K like, well, Ken. R-Y-U-K-E-N.
K-E-N.
Yeah, K like King, E like Edward, N like Nancy.
Okay.
My imaginary sister.
Viewken _
Okay.
777 at yahoo.com.
The market for 5 points. Can you tell where that's from?
Is it from Street Fighter?
Yes, he gets the prize.
What's my name, Gene? What's my name, Gene? I am the master. What?
Who the master? Sure enough, now.
Yes, you're the sure enough, Monty.
Do you have the power of the glow?
Yes. Oh yeah.
You got the power of the glow.
So you're saying Gene didn't get it?
No, Gene didn't get it. But for another reason.
You lose 5 nerd points.
What did I get?
The other reason. Well, nobody gets the other reason unless they're like a huge anime fan, but it's okay.
What are we talking about again?
But Ryuken, that he figured out that it was from Street Fighter and you did it.
But I got that, but what am I not getting?
That you're losing
the 5 points.
Fine. Sorry, Monty, just I didn't think you played video games that much.
Oh,
well,
I'm saying
you play them, you just...
What do you do now, Gene? Play video games.
Well, hey, I can do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, Monty, I've been hearing that you're really looking up on the Old Republic game now. But it caught your interest. At least the cinematic ads.
Yeah. No, but I love that the trailer you showed me. That was just amazing.
Yeah. It's really cool. I'm like going, why do I have to go to other... You might put that as like an aside, like a question. Why do we have to go to other people to give us our Star Wars fix besides Lucas?
Again, we did talk about briefly is that, you know, you had Roddenberry. He has a great idea, but you need to have other people kind of play in that world and expand it.
Yeah.
You know, here are your parameters. Have fun with it, you know. But the problem lies, and like even with the Star Trek novels, you have to put the universe back. You can ruin it. It's not the whole course of the chapters, but at the very end, you have to put it all back, which I hate it. You know, leave the universe sometimes kind of broken, you know, for other people to kind of rearrange it and fix it. I mean, Star Trek did it with J.J. Abrams. You know, he rearranged everything. So why not? So.
Well, the rules are simple, though. And even in serial television, you can't do that. I mean,
that's the whole idea. Like, when they did it in probably, like, my favorite Voyager episodes, when they did the Year in Hell, Yeah. Until the very end.
Let me
they screwed it up.
Okay. Well, guys, it's been enjoyable talking to you all again. Monte, I hope you can edit this stuff and make it work.
Yep. You should be fine.
All right, Monte, just email me when you have it done, and if you want to do any more, just let me know.
Will do.
Okay.
But you say bye to everybody. Say bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Monte, we'll talk to you later.
See ya.
Take care. Good night, Joe. Bye-bye, guys.